It's 10:15 in New York, and this is Martha Dean, and good morning, everybody. And I hope that you're keeping your chins up, or courage up, or something. We've now arrived at the stage where a good many people seem to be giving us pep talks about, you know, remain cheerful through it all. Well, I must say that I haven't seen anybody who is particularly grumpy about the situation yet. I do think that people are, you know, have stopped laughing and have stopped even smiling, but I haven't noticed anybody who's in a complete temper about it or feeling martyred. I looked at the faces on 6th Avenue this morning as I crossed on the way to WR and decided that everybody sort of has that look about, well, this is it. Now we will just simmer down and do it step by step and, you know, one step at a time and see if we get through today and then see if we get through tomorrow and then see if we get through the next day. But the sort of holiday spirit that always goes on the first day, I think, when people are sort of up against it, disappeared. I don't notice any holiday spirit around, but I do haven't noticed anybody being particularly grumpy, and certainly nobody ill-tempered about it. In fact, I don't really know anybody who feels particularly martyred. Good morning, Dick.
Good morning.
You don't feel martyred.
Oh, no. You never feel very fortunate, tell you the truth.
Because you live on the New York Central Railroad.
Yes. Sometimes I feel that's literally true, too.
Look, he arrived.
Good.
Thank you, Dick. The guest on the Martha Dean program this morning is Zero Mostel, and he just came through the door.
Thank you for the pickle.
Good morning, darling.
I had more gas than the Spanish Consolidated Edison for 1 month because of your pickles.
Well,
I was going to write you a strong letter. I was going to have my lawyer get in touch with you. Did he get in touch with you, by the way?
Your lawyer?
And it's agreed. We sue each other.
How are you this morning?
I'm fine. I started from my home, which is on 86th Street, early. I'm a chronic early comer.
Yeah.
Goer. No, I was a chronic early goer today.
I see.
And it took me an hour and a half to get here.
An hour and a half?
Yes.
From what street?
Because I was driving in reverse.
Oh.
I was contrary.
Did you drive down, or did you try to get a cab, or did you walk?
No, I drove, walked, ran.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I appreciate your getting here. I really do. That's your coffee. And
First pickles, then coffee.
Well, I think it's lukewarm.
This woman is a cornucopia. At least.
That's right. Ask and ye shall, you know, around here. Yeah. Why, maybe I'd better backtrack a minute. You came through the door, and I was so glad to see your smiling face and said, Zero Mostel.
This is a painted smile. She's going to sit and laugh at me like she did in Spain.
But everything you say amuses me. It's not that I'm a perfect audience. It's that you're a perfect guest on a radio program.
Thank you very much.
But to backtrack, you know about that, so that nobody listening will be confused about the pickle talk.
I'm a chevalier de backtracking, at least.
Because it's not exactly usual to start a morning radio program by having the guest say thank you for the pickles.
Yes.
And have the interviewer just giggle, as I did.
When I was in Spain, Miss Dean was Martha. Was very sweet to me. I had a yearning like a 7-month pregnant woman for a sour pickle. And I told her stuff because she understands the problem of womanhood. And she sent me a marvelous jar of
a gallon.
A gallon of pickles. To us, a jar is a gallon. A gallon is a jar. And I got these pickles, and I never had such abdominal pains since. I was hit in the stomach by a cow when we had a little farm in Connecticut.
That'll teach you to go around asking for things when you're not sure you want them. Because, now there's your hot coffee. You want cream and sugar?
No, thank you.
Just the way it is, huh? All right, fine.
Do you happen to have some pickles?
Now, but the back, yes, all right, fine. So the last thing you said to me was I'm starving to death in Spain.
Yes.
And I need some pickles from the Gaiety. Mm. So with the cooperation of United Artists, the movie company you were working for in Spain, TWA, and 19 people in my own office and 21 people on the street, we managed to get a gallon jar of pickles wrapped up.
I didn't bring one of them back.
Delivered to your hotel in
They're
Spain.
All in my unconscious stomach at this moment.
I thought you might take the whole jar up to the top of that mountain, Partridge Mountain.
No, I don't think I'm a greedy man, but I didn't allow one Spaniard or fellow American who passed my door to have one bite of that pickle. People would beg me I wouldn't give them a pickle. All my greed comes out when it comes to pickles.
You've lost a lot of weight since I saw you in Spain.
No, you're seeing me without that glorified nightgown I wore in the film. Actually, I'm about the same weight, but I'm going to lose a little more weight.
And you look rested and wonderful, and I understand you're on your way to Hollywood. You just dropped into New York to get another pickle and leave.
I got a pickle, and I'm going to do a thing in Hollywood, a TV special with Carol Burnett and Lucille Ball.
Now, Zero Mostel, let me give you a chance to finish your coffee, because just as you came through the door, I had started to do some commercials. And I want to do those.
I give you your big chance. Do your commercials.
I'll try to make a real production of them.
Please do.
In case you want to make
a
judgment.
If you falter, I'll help.
Well, do you know anything about Ayler's coffee?
No.
All right, then I'll tell you. Can't help with this one. Maybe later. You can help me with the New York Times when I get to that one.
Lovely.
Because you know about that. Ayler's coffee, and it's very good coffee. It's grade A coffee, and I'm not exaggerating. They've been making it for a very long time, and they do this very well. They always have. It is grade A coffee all the way, and people who like a robust, hearty, stimulating coffee in the morning and for lunch and for dinner and so on, enjoy Ayler's, and I think you will too. And it now comes in a rather elegant canister, which is a canister, and you slip off the label, and they've done this so that it's easy to slip off. A woman can do it. You don't have to call your husband and the plumber and two other people to get the label off. It slips off, and there you are with a nice extra canister in which to keep the extra things you have in the kitchen. Ayler's coffee. And now we have Mountain Valley Water from Hot Springs, Arkansas, and I know that a good many of you drink this.
I know
this.
That very well.
Do you?
Because of the Schubert Theaters and the brown water that comes from its tap, I always have cases of Mountain Valley Water, which I drink all the time.
Have it delivered to the theater.
I have it delivered to the theater, delivered to my home. It's the bane of my poor wife's existence. The well-known haberdasher, as you remember.
Yes, I know. I told in some detail about that darling wife of yours saying that I could borrow all the clothes she owned.
I don't know why she said that. She has no clothes.
At least she had some warm clothes, and I didn't. I wasn't prepared for that kind of weather. I'd been reading all this stuff about sunny Spain, and she said she would lend me boots, slacks, a couple of shirts, a sweater of yours, and wool underwear if I needed it. Now, I felt I'd made a new
friend.
This
is a woman who lives by wool.
This is a woman who lives by charm and generosity.
Wool poisoning.
Now, let's see. Mountain Valley Water from Hot Springs, Arkansas. I don't need to say any more if you have it delivered.
Very low in sodium content. Very good for you.
Oh, I started to say a good many people drink it for health reasons, but a great many of us drink it just because it tastes better, and it does.
It does. I love it.
And if you live in New York City and you want to have it delivered to your house or your apartment or your dressing room in the theater, call Brant 95252. Or if you live in New Jersey, Pilgrim 86868, or send a postcard to me, Martha Dean.
I live in Delaware. Whom do I call?
You send a postcard to me, Martha Dean, WOR, New York 18, and I will have a booklet and price list.
Pickles, a jar of Mountain Valley Water and a jar of pickles. What more can a man want?
Well, I'm not going to go back into it because I think you've done an excellent commercial for Mountain Valley Water, and we all thank you. Everybody
welcome.
In Hot Springs, Arkansas, thanks you. I thank you. Mr. John Scott, who distributes this marvelous water in New York, thanks you.
And I thank them.
All right, now we get to the Flemington Fur Company at Flemington, New Jersey. Have you bought any new fur coats for Kathy lately?
No.
Well, anyway.
She's independently wealthy. She can buy her own. I mean, she does.
She's independently wealthy because she just takes your checks as they come in.
That's right.
Exactly.
I live on a meager allowance that she gives me once in a while.
Now let's.
Predicated on my behavior.
How's your behavior been lately?
Abominable.
But I gather you're not much trouble at home. You may be trouble in
I'm
public.
I'm afraid of her. She's Irish.
She's good looking too. In addition
Irish
to being
strong.
Generous,
she's the Michael Quill of my home.
Oh, wait till you get home. She'll fix you.
I'm not going home.
The Flemington Fair Company at Flemington, New Jersey is open every day in the week, you know. 9 to 9, Monday through Friday. 9 to 6, Saturday and Sunday. And now I'll interrupt the Flemington Fair commercial and the Martha Dean program to go to Harry Hennessy in the WR newsroom. And now we get back to the Martha Dean program, WOR New York. Our guest this morning on the program is Zero Mostel. And when we went to Harry Hennessy in the newsroom, I just started to tell you again about the Flemington Fur Company at Flemington, New Jersey. I've been telling you about the Flemington Fur Company for about more than 13 years now, and I must say that I haven't lost my enthusiasm for these fine people who do such a good job in giving us beautiful furs at lower prices. There are many reasons for shopping over there. First, they handle only number one top quality furs the best. Secondly, their prices are lower and considerably lower. It's a low-key place, and you shop at your own pace and have a thoroughly good time. And you do save money when you shop at the Flemington Fur Company at Flemington, New Jersey. 8 Spring Street, open every day in the week, Monday through Friday, 9 to 9, Saturday and Sunday, 9 to 6. And right now they're having their big January sale and a clearance on their beautiful fur hats and their all kinds of coats and cloth suits too. It's a fine sale and you save even more money than I intimated a few minutes ago. Do go to Flemington during the January fur sale. And now, as is our custom bright and early every morning, we turn to the front page of the New York Times. And when you do that, you really know what's going on, all the news, and it's colorful, it's clear, it's complete, it's local, it's national, it's international. And those of you who arranged for a home delivery some time ago must feel pretty good about the whole thing these mornings, because no matter what else happens, at least you have your copy of the New York Times there on the doorstep when you get up. And it costs very little extra to have the Times delivered to your house or your apartment. If you call them at 556-7045, they'll arrange for home delivery. Or if you live out of town, send a postcard to the Times, Times Square Station, New York, New York. And again, home delivery will be arranged. There are several front page stories you won't want to miss this morning. Some excellent coverage of the whole strike situation. There are some good pictures on the front page. One of Michael J. Quill as he was turning to the arresting officer at the Americana yesterday, and then a picture of him entering the civil jail, surrounded by reporters as officers escorted him into jail. Barely 2 hours after his arrest, he collapsed and was taken to a hospital, as you very well know. The Times has done an exceptionally good piece on this subject, I think, this particular part of the strike subject. And then, also on the front page this morning, there's a one-column headline, $100 million loss each day is seen. Most employers to end pay to absentees, and the big stores especially hard hit. This was a statement from the Commerce and Industry Association of New York reporting last night. Starting today, only a few employers will continue to pay absentee workers, according to Ralph Gross, executive vice president of the association. He went on to say that this policy, which a business executive called a no-show, no-dough, runs counter to the pleadings of Mayor Lindsay. The mayor asked employers to display no prejudice against workers who heeded his advice to stay at home rather than choke Manhattan streets with automobile traffic. Mr. Gross complained that the mayor was misguided. Paying workers for staying home was, in effect, quote, subsidizing the strike, he said. By putting pressure on wage earners, making them get to work one way or another, or penalizing them for absenteeism, resentment against Michael J. Quill and the striking transport workers union can be increased, Mr. Gross said. Otherwise, people won't holler for the strike to end, he added. And the $100 million figure he, quote, gives includes lost pay. Then the story goes on. It's particularly interesting what's happening in the theater. And the mayor's continued pleading to New Yorkers to stay out of Manhattan angered people in the restaurant and theater business. The mayor has descended from fatuity to banality, David Merrick, the producer said. And Mr. Merrick had a few other things to say about the Mayor Lindsay asking people to stay out of New York. Mr. Merrick disagrees thoroughly. It's hurting his theater business. And this is a rather controversial note introduced on the front page of the New York Times this morning. As might be expected, Mr. Merrick has a comment on everything that's going on. You can comment.
Nothing is safe.
Nothing is safe. Just name it, and Mr. Merrick will have a comment. I think the last time he was on the front page of the New York Times was when he and the cast of, or he was invited by Ambassador Lodge to a party in the Far East while he was there with Mary Martin and Dolly. And he arrived at the party to find that only Mary Martin and her husband and himself had been invited. Whereupon he issued a blistering statement that Ambassador Lodge hadn't invited the whole cast of 84. But it turned out the next day that Mary Martin's husband had made out the guest list. So Ambassador Lodge was completely in the clear. He cleared himself on that one. Anyway, this back to the front page of the Times. It is a front page story on what's happening in the theater and entertainment and restaurant business as well as the department store business, and I think you'll be particularly interested in it. There are some things in there that I hadn't read anywhere else and hadn't heard anywhere else. Now, our guest on the Martha Dean program this morning is Zira Mustel.
Friend of David Merrick's.
Well, that's all right. I am too, I hope.
Friend of the foes of David Merrick. A new organization. The FFDM.
I wasn't particularly criticizing David Merrick, except he always does have something to say about everything.
You know, about the strike, I don't think, you know, it's so involved with personalities that you lose sight that the transit workers have a good grievance. Their wages have not gone up as much as people in other professions. It's a tough job, the 5 days of bus driving, subway driving, without much relief. It's one of the most difficult jobs in the world. The system of spy networks that they have, you know, to check on the drivers is a kind of anchor around the chain if people want to do their job. And they have very legitimate grievances, and it's terrible that it's gotten lost in the personality of one of the mayor and the secondly of Mr. Quill. I think if it were explained on the basis of what really is happening there, they might make more progress, which is very, very seldom read about the demands of the union, nor do you read the problems of the city as well. I think they should have an increase, everybody's agreed, but it's lost as to where that increase is or what it should be. And it's unfortunate that it's lost among the personalities of the people involved in the strike, I feel. Does that clear anything up? And I don't think it has to do
with
somebody
idea.
Taking a trip from fatuity to banality. Actually, it's a bargaining issue which should be resolved, and I think it should be resolved with floating of bonds and loans so that we keep the subway working and running for the benefit of people.
And people are talking about the need, perhaps, for raising the subway fare, because no other city in the world has a subway fare this low.
No, I think it's lower in many of the foreign countries. Perhaps they should raise it. I think that the services should be better, it should be cleaner. And I think it's a problem that should be taken care of very dispassionately, you know, with understanding. I think it too often gets lost into personalities clashing, you know.
I've seen this happen in labor strikes before, and yeah. So have you. I remember one famous one when the issues of the United Mine Workers got completely lost because
right.
of the personalities of John L. Lewis and
Franklin
D. Roosevelt.
Yes, and Roosevelt.
That's right. And pretty soon the discussion was, you know, are you mad at Roosevelt, or are you mad at John L. Lewis, or do you love both?
And actually, one of the roughest professions ever was a coal miner, and... by the way, you know, I was once a member of United Mine Workers, the Cosmetic and Perfume Division.
You were?
In this city. Cosmetic and Perfume Miners, Workers. I was a cosmetic and perfume miner. You know, when he tried to organize on industrial lines, I was working on the docks, baling up, you know, rough materials that make drugs and perfumes and cosmetics. And it was organized by the mine workers. So I am a mine worker, and I understand the problems of the fellows who work for a living.
And
if David Merrick worked a few years in the mines, I think he would see the problem as well.
How long did you work on the docks?
I worked for about a year. And I worked during my college days at the docks as well. You have to make my way.
But you worked on the docks before you went to college?
Yes. No, at the time I went
to
college.
At the time?
Yes.
Because you went to college right here in New York?
City College, yes.
City College, and graduated from there?
Yes.
And later taught there?
I graduated about 100 years ago.
And taught
I just
there.
Realized the other day that I graduated in 1935. That's what? 30 years ago. I was a callow youth 30 years ago.
But in order to get through, you had a dock job.
I had to work, yes. Couldn't do it any other way. You remember those days? It was 1935.
I do remember, yes.
They were terrible days.
Yes, I remember very well. And then you taught English and also art at City College later, didn't you?
Then I was on WPA. I was the youngest artist on WPA, 21 years old.
Was this after you got through college?
Yes, yes. And then I worked on the docks again. And then it's been a miserable life. May I recount this terrible life that I've had?
Why are you laughing?
I don't know. And you saw me in the mountains riding chariots.
Well, it's probably...
It's not easy for a fat man, is my conclusion. Everybody sees the world in his terms.
But now I sort of begin to understand why you did such a good job in driving the chariots. You know, so forceful.
Better than the mines, subways.
Because you'd been your muscles had been trained on the docks.
Yes, my former muscles had been trained on the docks. It was some hidden reservoir that erupted.
Apparently, we're about to be interrupted again from the WOR newsroom.
I hope it's good news.
No, we're not about to be interrupted again. I misunderstood the signals from the control room.
They were saying, get rid of Mostel.
No, nobody's saying get rid of Mostel. Now, since I got back from Spain and talked to you on top of that mountain while you were making a funny thing happened on the way to the forum, I've seen a book, Zero by Mostel.
Yes.
Now let's talk about Zero.
Yeah.
Would your mother name you that?
No, that's a nickname.
How come?
I don't know, you know, I think the original reason why my name is Zero has been lost somewhere.
Zero.
We're going to be interrupted.
That's right, and we go to City Hall immediately.
Good. Good news, I hope.
And this is the Martha Dean Program, WOR New York, and the guest is Zero Mostel. I don't know why I ask you about the nickname Zero, except on this rather elegant book, Zero by Mostel, you can't help but say Zero. How come? Your mother never nicknamed you that.
But there's a thing, you know, I think there's so many fantasies involved with a man's nickname that I think I lost the original reason why, or the truth of why my name was Zero, because there's a lot of reasons why one be named Zero. But I think it's kind of a reflection of my intellectual duplicity of some kind or capacity.
Well, you never got any zeros in school.
Oh, I got some, yes. By the way, you know, I failed public speaking in City College.
Is that the only subject you ever failed?
A living proof of revenge. Oh, no. No, nothing else.
I love that. They failed public speaking, and later on they have you back there to teach.
Oh, I must say that I had the reason why I failed is because I had a low S. In other words, I said stop instead of stop. Did you notice the fine difference?
Do it again.
I said stop instead of stop. The S should be higher up on the palate.
Stop.
And they sent me to a speech clinic in those days of nonconformity. I hated to go, and so he failed me. And there was a long, tall teacher with a huge Adam's apple, which I'm sure was overdeveloped from giving speech lessons or from a rupture that occurred in his throat from forcing the tip of the tongue to the upper palate. And he failed me twice in a row in public speaking, and I never did clear up. I have a low S to this day, if you notice. It's amazing that I make my living in a public in a public field where one uses a speech. And I was wondering, maybe I'd have been more of a success if I cleared up that low S, but I think it's too late. My tongue is too tired.
And you'll have to admit you've been somewhat of a success in the theater.
That's not for me to admit.
It's for me to say that one of the best things I ever saw and one of the best acting jobs I ever saw was Zero Mostel in Fiddler on the Roof.
I never saw it, so I never
could
tell.
Well, I'd like to see it again a few times, so could you do something about that?
Yes, I can do it right here. I no longer am doing the show. I'm doing...
I know.
My motto is onward and downward. Other things we have to do.
So then now you've made the picture if anything happened on the way to the forum.
Yes.
And you've done this book, Zero by Mostel.
Yes.
Which has many photographs of you in various roles and in various attitudes. Is that a good way to say it?
Yes.
And some good reproductions of your drawings.
Yes.
Because we haven't said a word about the other side of you.
Yeah.
We've talked about acting and speaking and the trouble with your S's.
Yeah.
But you're a very fine artist.
I don't know how fine that's not for me to say. Either. Take a look and see. Let's see your face reaction. Don't scream.
I've read that book. Don't you dare open it as though you're about to show me the pictures.
No, I won't.
I looked at all the pictures and I read the text. Mm. And your people at the publishers did this rather in the... Well, not rather, but in the format of an interview with you.
Yes.
They wanted you to write a book, and I gather you wouldn't.
I couldn't. I think the most difficult thing is to write about yourself. I know a lot of people can write about themselves. I think most writing is autobiographical. But I can't sit down and talk about myself, nor do I think it's very interesting. So we came to some kind of decision to do the book where the editor, who's an old friend of mine, Ben Rayburn, asked me questions, and I talked to him, and we arrived at this exposition or exposure of myself.
Well, it's very interesting, and there's not much text. It's mostly photographs and
drawings. Oh, one of the reviewers
said... But it's a handsome book.
One of the reviewers said, you know, that my art is derivative. And that's like someone comes up to the studio and wants to buy a painting, and they look at one person and say, that's a Modigliani, that looks like a Chagall, that looks like a Lautrec, that looks like this, that, the other thing. And that's a kind of lack of sensitivity, because, for instance, the drawing we're looking at is a very famous Corot. And who do you learn from? You learn from whoever is very good. And it's, you know, my own little interpretation of Corot. You know, Corot is either better or different than I am. And... I think you learn by looking at these things, and it was put in the book, and no one knows that it's not only a case of being derivative, but it's also a case of learning something. You know, never too old to learn something. And I do draw some old masters all the time, perhaps my own way. They don't say of Picasso is derivative, not that I compare myself to Picasso, but he made a whole series on Delacroix paintings, on Velasquez paintings, but they no longer say he's derivative. He does it in his own way, I hope. I used to always copy old masters. You know, my mother used to make me a little velvet suit, and I'd go to the Metropolitan and copy from the old masters, and I got so proficient, and I guess a little bit of the ham came at me, that I copied a wonderful portrait they no longer hang, an American called Alexander, a very pretty little young girl, and I used to paint very, 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 very concentrated. And if the person came around and looked at the painting, they say, oh, what a cute little kid that was. You know, I was different in my early teens. And I was painting and copying the painting upside down. That was my little joke. They fled from me as if I was some maniac.
Did you ever have time before you left Madrid to spend as much time as you wanted to in the Prado Museum?
Yeah, I used to sneak away to Prado. You know, there's something about paintings that haunt people, I think. The day I left Madrid, I went for lunch across the street to the Ritz Hotel and then walked in and said a fond farewell to the Bosch painting of the Garden of Delights. And that was the last sight of Spain I had.
You told me to run right up and stand in front of it for a time, so I did. The day I left, too.
Well,
I have to go back some more.
You see that? I'm making a new life. You're going to travel again, see it again.
Because it's too much for one look.
Well, that's the greatness of that painting. I think it's my kind of work. You know, there are many ways to paint, but that painting is one of those paintings that really never has any conclusions. You can study it for 1,000 hours, and nobody does. And you'll always discover something new. It's so complex, it's so deep, it's so different that you can never, ever in a lifetime, if you saw it every day for 16 hours a day, which is impossible to do, you could never completely analyze and absorb that painting.
Well, all right. I'm glad I started not to say that. But I didn't. I thought, well, you know, I better just say I have to go back a few more times.
Yeah, actually, well, that's proof of what I say in a sense. When you look at that painting on that bush, you go the first time, you will have a feeling of confusion.
There's so much in
it. Yes, and then you'll see one incident, and it'll tickle you. Then another one will disturb you. And another one will be just so beautiful that you become speechless. And then after a while, you just go back to it all the time. And every time you discover something new in it, well, there's nothing in nature as good as that. It improves nature.
But I had to my starting point was long, you know, far back. You started ahead of me when you went to see the Bosch at the Garden of Delight. I don't know as much about painting as you do, nor do I paint. Mm. So I had to start way back. It's almost...
I'll tell you the interesting about
that.
I
had to start at the primer stage, whereas you probably started, you know, far ahead.
Oh, no, no. As a young boy, I once saw a detail of it, which I thought was a complete painting. And I was very amazed when I saw it then enlarge, you know, saw the whole painting.
And it's a very large painting.
It's not very large. It's a triptych, you know, three panels. And
well, I know, but when you put them all together...
Well, it's not as large as a Klein or a de Kooning that you see now. That's 7 feet long. But it has so much in it that it never ends for you. That's one of the great things about that work of art. It really is subject to a great deal of subjective understanding of something which is impossible to completely absorb in one, two, to a thousand sittings.
Are you doing much painting now? Have you had
yes?
To, are you?
I'm free. That's in the picture. Free.
So between engagements, is that the way we say it?
Yes.
But you used to paint every day when
yeah,
you were working.
I couldn't paint in Spain because
it was so cold. The paint froze.
Not only that. That'd be a nice thing. You know, everybody's finding new methods to paint with colored ice cubes. And it would drip just like the modern paintings.
You don't do modern paintings.
I went, oh, sure. I like all things I've done by hand. There's a very famous painter, I don't want to say his name, who was very modern in the drip school. And I was standing and talking to him at his house and another fella, and a hunk of paint just oozed down the canvas and kept dripping down. I said to him, hey, a painting is dripping. And he said, I meant it to be that way.
Zero Mostel, I just got a signal from the control room. And right here, I think it would be a good idea if I... I sort of finished that shopping list for my sponsors.
Go on.
And then I want to...
Be my guest.
I want to ask you to tell our listeners and to talk to me about sort of the way you operate as an actor, because it's a rather unusual way you do. First, I want to tell you all again that this is a very good time to go to Macy's to buy Broadloom wall-to-wall carpeting, or to buy a rug if you need one. They have the most marvelous selection, you know, literally millions of yards of Broadloom and piles of beautiful rugs at reasonable prices. But if you cannot get to Macy's, Macy will come to you, and that's right now during the strike. If you call Lackawanna 46000 and ask for Shop at Home, Lackawanna 46000, ask for Shop at Home Broadloom. The Macy number is Lackawanna 46000, and after you get them, you just say Broadloom, Shop at Home Broadloom, and they will send decorator-trained salesmen to your home or your apartment with samples of the rugs and samples of the Broadloom. So, and this is true of the whole metropolitan area, so if you cannot get to Macy's, and you probably can't, let Macy come to you, Lackawanna 46000, and ask for Shop at Home Broadloom. And then Goodman's Pure Egg Noodles. Goodman's Pure Egg Noodles are back on the Martha Dean program, and I'm glad. Very good noodles, Goodman's Pure Egg Noodles. And they've been doing these for a long time. And why are they so good? Because they use the finest ingredients. So whether you are making the right dish to go along with a stew or a casserole dish, try Goodman's Pure Egg Noodles. And they use the very best ingredients, and the very best selected pasteurized eggs, and the best eggs are more expensive. And they don't try to save pennies on these noodles. They just make the best ones they know how to make, and you'll enjoy them ever so much. Goodman's Pure Egg Noodles. Put them on your shopping list. And then we get to First National City Bank, the only bank your family ever needs, and it's a good slogan because it's a true one. They have every kind of banking service all under one roof, and they have more branches in this area than any other bank, including Nassau and Westchester. Now, they have the expected services, checking accounts, special checking accounts, savings accounts. But in addition, it's the perfect place to arrange for a home mortgage loan, a home improvement loan, a tuition loan, you know, an education loan, a personal loan. First National City, and I'm not being bossy about this, I'm not telling you to run, not walk to First National City. I'm just saying that if you have banking business to do, discuss it with them first and then make a final decision, make up your mind. Now, one more thing before we get back to Zero Mustel, and this is about Anbesol, A-N-B-E-S-O-L, and this is the product that relieves the pain and then goes on to help the cut or bruise or burn to heal. Anbesol's thoroughly tested formula brings you fast, safe relief from pain of paper cuts, household burns, scratches, bruises, and it contains benzocaine, which relieves pain immediately, and then it goes on to help to prevent infection. No single medication can give you this amazingly effective relief. It's sold in drugstores, only in drugstores and pharmacies, and it's 79 cents and sold with a money-back guarantee. Anbesol, A-N-B-E-S-O-L, a very good product, and keep a bottle in the medicine cabinet at home and in the medicine cabinet in the office. I think I'll just finish the whole thing, and then I won't have to interrupt you again, Zero Mustel. This is about Miracle White, an all-purpose laundry additive, and it dissolves all the foreign matter left in the material, so the foreign matter goes down the drain. And you know that if you leave soap or detergent in a fabric, nylons will get yellow and other fabrics will get grayish. But if you make sure that all the soap and all the detergent is out each time you do the laundry, then the white clothes stay whiter and the colored clothes stay brighter and fresher and newer looking. So Miracle White, an all-purpose laundry additive sold with double your money back guarantee. If you don't like it, send them the label and they will send you double your money back. And if you need a new stain removal chart, let me know and I will have one sent to you right away. Now, one more thing. We have Stouffer's Frozen Foods on the program. That's S-T-O-U-F-F-E-R-S, Stouffer's Frozen Foods. I know that a good many of you eat in the Stouffer restaurants. You know how good their food is. Well, now they've frozen many of these delicious dishes, and you buy them at the frozen food department at your favorite store. The broccoli au gratin is delicious. This is really a good product, broccoli au gratin, Stouffer's. And they have many other dishes. So when you get to the grocery store, look in the frozen food department and pick out some of Stouffer's frozen foods and try them. I think you'll be very pleased. And do try Stouffer's broccoli au gratin. Now, this is the Martha Dean Program, WOR New York, and the guest is Zero Mustel. Zero Mustel. And when I interrupted, I want to give you a chance to talk a little bit about you as an actor, because we didn't have time to do that in Spain. We weren't generalizing. We were being quite specific. Mm. And you told me that and proof is this morning. The door opened and in you came alone. You don't travel with a retinue. You aren't surrounded by people. You don't travel with publicity man, manager, secretary, two other people. You sort of work alone.
Yes, how am I alone?
This is quite unusual.
I just could never operate, you know, with a gang of people around. So I like to be by myself and work by myself and concern yourself with whatever you're doing at the time. So you do the best of your ability. I think it's unfortunate that you have to live by a lot of things in the theater or in that matter, in any profession, which have nothing to do with your work. I think you should have all your energy for your work. I hate dissipating your energy if you're engaged, and after all, a play is a work of art, engaged in something which has nothing to do with the play or the painting that you're doing or the writing that you're doing or whatever you're involved with. So I don't like having a retinue around me because I think they take up too much of your time.
Do you even have a secretary?
Like, I always hate double features because it takes too long. One is enough.
Do you even have a secretary?
I have a part-time. When the mail gets very heavy, I call a very lovely lady who comes over and writes the things for me.
Do you have a press?
For 1 hour. No more.
1 hour. And
yes.
Then do you have a publicity manager?
No, I don't have one at all.
Have you ever had a press agent?
Years and years ago. It was the club's press agent, the nightclub I worked in, and he took care of the press department.
But you don't have one of your own?
No.
Do you have a manager?
No.
When the contract is ready to be signed, you just go in, discuss it, and sign it?
No. I have a lawyer, an old friend of mine, takes care of that. I wouldn't dream of this starting to talk about money. How much am I getting for this?
Another jar of pickles.
Good, I settle.
But you don't have a manager?
No.
Have you ever had a manager?
No, not really.
Do you always find a cab and go on off
alone? My wife says to me, Katie says to me, listen, why don't you, you should do this, this can make money, and so. She's always afraid I'll do a play in Urdu, some obscure play that no one understands. And I say, what's wrong in doing one? What's wrong in doing something that you think is good and you don't know its result after you've finished? I mean, how can you tell what'll happen? For instance, I think one of the most satisfying things I ever did was Ulysses in Nighttown by James Joyce that no one would produce except somebody in Off-Broadway. Yet it gave me as much or more satisfaction than anything that I've ever done. I did a Molière in a summer stock, and I had as much enjoyment as anything I've ever done. So,
you know, we have to go. I don't think I'll let you go.
Where do we go?
Well, you stay there a minute because I have an idea. Our guest this morning has been Zero Mostel. You'll hear more of him if I have any luck here. Until tomorrow morning at 10:15, goodbye, everybody.
What happened? Oh, God, there's that cable.